The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said fighting will continue even if a ceasefire deal is agreed with Hamas. Meanwhile, at least 40 Palestinians were arrested in overnight Israeli raids in the occupied West Bank, which of course pales into insignificance next to the 37,000 people who have been killed in Israel's war on Gaza since October the 7th. For more on this, I'm joined by Fawaz Gerges, the Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Good morning, Fawaz.
Good morning.
The recent developments in Gaza, the 40 Palestinians, first of all, before we get to Gaza, arrested overnight in the West Bank. Is there any particular significance to that?
Well, I mean, I think the simple answer to your question is that the war goes on. The bloodletting of Palestinians goes on. Every time you have me on your program, there is one or two massacres, either in Gaza or the West Bank. Just a couple of days ago, an injured Palestinian was basically strapped into an armed carrier, Israeli armed carriers, in front of the cameras, being used as a human shield. You know, more than dozens of Palestinians were killed in a bombing where people were sheltering, and the international, you know, Red Cross office was also almost shattered away. People don't realize we're not just talking about 38,000 Palestinians who have been killed in Gaza. More than 500 Palestinians have been killed on the West Bank, and including more than 100 children. There's really a war going on in the entirety of occupied Palestine. And I think what saddens me deeply as a human being, forget that I am a scholar or observer or a historian, that the bloodletting now in Palestine, occupied Palestine, has been normalized, has been naturalized, has been routinized. Hardly covers now. It's part of everyday coverage. And if you listen to the Israeli narrative, Israel always attacks Hamas, but the casualties mostly are Palestinian civilians. And this really raises big questions about where's the international community, where's the world, where's the international courts, the United Nations? Many, many questions and really very few answers.
Now, the normalization that you describe, at the outset, there was a sense that there was such a groundswell of international opinion that Israel would not be able to continue with their fighting the way that they were fighting. That seems to be less and less the case now. International pressure does not seem to, A, have any effect, or B, to have been able to sustain the momentum that it once had. Is that a naive view, or is that how you see it?
No, that's absolutely correct. And as importantly, that the Biden administration has given up on its own ceasefire plan. In fact, the Biden administration has gone out of its way to shift blame to Hamas, even though the Israeli Prime Minister and his government and ministers have repeatedly made it very clear that the war will not end even after they destroy Rafah, which is the last bit of Gaza. The Israeli army now says that they have basically destroyed or occupied 70% of Rafah. They need about 2-3 weeks to finish the job, to complete the mission. But the morning after, what the Biden administration keeps talking about, the morning after. The morning after will most likely look like the day and yesterday and 8 months ago, because the war will continue. And really an important point that has escaped the entire media and observer communities: Israel now occupies Gaza. It has isolated Gaza. It basically burned the Rafah cross border between Egypt and Palestine. It occupies the Philadelphia path between Palestine and Egypt. Literally now, Israel is fully in occupation of Gaza. And this tells you a great deal that Israel, this is not really about surrendering authority to any kind of, you know, whether it's a Palestinian or international. The Israeli army will be in charge, will have a free hand to attack any place in Gaza anytime, at least for a year or so. And this is the basically conventional wisdom now in Washington.
And what's the reaction and what's the level of support in Israel for Netanyahu and his administration?
Well, look, anyone, and I really say it was all humility, anyone who tells you that this is Netanyahu war is basically doesn't know what they're talking about. The reason why Netanyahu does what he does, he has the full support of the Israeli public. He has the full support, basically, of a significant critical element. He has a majority in the parliament. But all the surveys that we have seen in Israel show really overwhelming support for the war. I mean, you might say why. Of course, the shock of the, brutality of the 7th of October, Hamas attacks on Israel. But I think the bigger question really involved is that the Israelis basically had never imagined that the Palestinians could stand up, could defend themselves, could attack, could go on the offensive. Because the idea that really deeply entrenched in the Israeli psychology, the Palestinians could be maintained, could be controlled, could be subjugated, could be dominated, and dare there if they really tried to attack us. And that's why the shock of the 7th of October really provides Netanyahu with a great deal of ammunition, public opinion ammunition, to basically continue his war. And guess what? Basically extend the war now to the northern front between Israel and Hezbollah's Lebanon. In fact, once most of the guns fall silent in Gaza, the Israeli army is preparing now to shift significant numbers of soldiers and assets to the northern border, and the Americans are extremely anxious about a spark that could really basically bring about all-out war, not only between Israel and Lebanon's Hezbollah, but between Israel and Iran as well, because Hezbollah is not just an arm of Iran, it's a strategic partner. And as you remember, you and I and many guests, from day one, we have been barking about the likelihood and the risks of a region-wide conflict, and we might still see it, sadly and tragically, if the war in Gaza continues.
Now, if the Israeli body politic and the US body politic are as immune to pressure as you suggest that they are not feeling any of the weight of international opinion, what then can act upon them to steer them away from the strategic direction that you describe?
I'm hoping that the warrants by the International Criminal Court will be with us very soon, and we're expecting the warrants.
Do they matter? Do they have an effect?
Well, they matter a great deal because they shift public opinion worldwide and in Israel too, at least the mainstream, and the International Court of Justice and some really European countries. I mean, don't underestimate what Ireland and Spain and Norway and Belgium and Armenia and other states are doing. But the reality is, if you ask me at the end of the day, without a shift in policy in the US and the UK and Germany, I mean, the three major components, 70% of arms and ammunition are provided by the United States, 30%, 20-something by Germany, and 10% by Britain. This is really it. Without a major shift, a Labour government, if the Labour Party wins, in the next few days, this could really bring about a kind of reassessment. And the Labour Party has already made it very clear, despite the cowardice of Starmer, has made it very clear that a warrant by the International Criminal Court will be executed in Britain and other European countries. But at the end of the day, your question is very important. For your own listeners, there is no magical wand. It's really we truly... And I've taught international relations and Middle Eastern politics for more than three decades. This is the law of the jungle. We are back to the law of the jungle. Starvation as a weapons of war. Civilian lives don't matter. Massacres literally repeatedly. Children, women, elderly, medical, schools, anything can happen. And this creates a precedent. We're talking about Gaza, you and I, but this precedent will come to haunt the international community for decades to come, in particular the Western powers, the United States, the UK and Germany.
We've talked a lot about the military condition. Could you expand a bit on where you're going there in relation to the humanitarian impact? As we now stand, what's the situation and what is your prediction?
Well, look, I mean, international organizations, including the United Nations, have already today and yesterday have repeatedly said that starvation and famine is basically increasing and deepening in northern Gaza. Their aid is not coming to Gaza anymore. Israel now has basically burned the Rafah crossing between Egypt and Gaza. So hardly any truck is coming from Egypt. And the American bridge has collapsed. Even the Defense Department has acknowledged that it miscalculated. There are very few trucks coming into Gaza. Hospitals are not really functioning anymore. You have devastation, really, in terms of famine, in terms of starvation. Hospitals now disappear. I mean, they have destroyed the overwhelming majority of hospitals, of schools, of infrastructure. Not to mention that people have been battered now. Water, there is no water now. I mean, imagine the temperature, 45 degrees. You're talking about Ireland now. The temperature in Ireland is 20-22 today. Imagine 45. People are basically drinking the seawater, the salted water. You're talking, according to the United Nations and humanitarian organizations, they're saying more than 1 million Palestinians are at risk of dying, even when the guns fall silent in the next few weeks or next few months.
Did you say 1 million?
1 million. 1 million Palestinians are at risk as a result, not just of the killing by bombs, but because of, famine and water. And of course, the lack of all kind of ills as a result of, you know, lack of hospitalization and what have you. And these are not my numbers. They're all open sources. 1 million, more than 1 million Palestinians are at risk of dying as a result of this particular war and the destruction of medical and food and habitat in Gaza.
And I assume that is not a problem that even if the war ended, that is not a problem that you can fix like a light switch, because you have the issues of how do you rebuild the infrastructure sufficiently to get supplies in, to deal with medical impact, to deal with people who may already have contracted illnesses or be suffering with injuries, with septicemia, etc., etc.
That's exactly what the United Nations and the humanitarian agencies have been warning about. Even if the war ends, you're going to have probably tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands dying as a result of basically destruction of the habitat in Gaza. There are no hospitals anymore. Imagine cancers, imagine diseases. And now you have children who are drinking basically seawater. So imagine what it will do for the next few years. And also, even if the guns fall silent, Israel will continue to occupy Gaza for many years to come, that you won't have a full-scale reconstruction. In fact, according to the latest plan by Netanyahu, the reconstruction effort will be the last phase that who knows when, probably 2 or 3 or 4 years, and this will take decades. You're talking about 60% of the infrastructure has been basically destroyed. No medical school, infrastructure or hospitals and schools. You have tens of thousands of Palestinian children now cannot go back to school. Not to mention the habitat. Israel has bulldozed any kind of greenery in Gaza in terms of agriculture, and it has a buffer zone. We can go on and on, but this is really catastrophic. The humanitarian, forget the politics and the military. In terms of humanitarian catastrophe, this will be seen as really one of the greatest catastrophic disasters that befalls a community in such a short time. You're talking so far about 9 months. Imagine if the war lasts for a year or so.
Fawaz, thank you very much for your time this morning. That's Fawaz Gurjus, Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics and Political Science.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.